Welcome to Family Life Today, presented in cooperation with this station by Power to Change. We hope today's program will give you something to reflect on and to encourage you in your relationships. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson.
Okay, so I watched a video the other day on YouTube, and this guy was on the streets, basically sharing Christ with strangers, you know, that he met on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And he had one of the most gentle perspectives and tender heart of love toward these people who don't believe what he believes. I was very respectful of what I watched him do.
This says a lot because this is important to you. Yeah. You're an evangelist at heart.
I think that's one of my gifts.
And the way people approach that is important to you. So yep. For you to have admiration and respect for this person says a lot.
Yeah, and he's sitting across the table from me right now. Preston Perry is with us.
The whole time I'm like, what are you talking about?
You were hoping it was you, but you didn't know.
Preston, this is how he did it. You should do it like him.
Exactly.
No, I
was watching your YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And seriously, I mean, I know it's in your book. We're going to talk about your book today, How to Tell the Truth. And you talk about not winning arguments, but winning people. But to watch you do it, I was so impressed. Because we've all seen how it's not done well.
Yeah.
But let our listeners know a little bit about you. I mean, a lot of people know who you are. They know about With the Perrys, your podcast with your wife, Jackie Hill Perry.
Yeah.
But give us a little background.
Yeah, my name's Preston Perry. I grew up on the south side of Chicago. I didn't grow up in a church environment. My mom, she raised me, my siblings. I grew up in a lot of poverty-stricken areas. I grew up, you know, in the hood. And the only person that was like a Christian in my family was my grandmother. She loved the Lord, and she would take us to church like on Easter and Sunday. We would go to church with her. But other than that, I didn't grow up in the church at all. And, you know,
I heard your grandmother loved the Lord, but she was spicy.
She was. She's a firecracker.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She'll love you well, but she'll tell you the truth. How to tell the truth, right? And, you know, I heard the gospel for the first time in a house church. Like, the gospel that rocked me. This pastor got up and said, if you think God being a God of love means he won't destroy everything he hates, you don't know what love is.
Really? How old were you?
I was 15.
Oh.
I was 15.
Why do you think that stuck out to you?
Because I think I heard that God is a God of love. I heard about God, but I never really connected it with my sin. I never really connected it with that I was an enemy of God, that the things that I did deserved death, you know, because of my sin and my rebellion against a holy and a righteous God.
Mm.
And so when he said that, it was like, wow, I became so keenly aware of my sin. I didn't give my life to the Lord, but I became aware that I was a sinner and that I needed somebody to save me.
You mentioned earlier, as you were talking through the cover of your book, that you were in a gang. Were you in a gang at that point?
I was gang activity. I was breaking into houses. I got kicked out of school multiple times. Went to alternative school 3 times. I got kicked out of 3 high schools.
Mm.
And so I was just really just a problem kid.
Looking back on that kid, how did that kid come about? You know, what happened in your life to create that rebellion? You didn't know anything about God.
My dad and my mom got divorced when I was 5. And so for 5 to the age of 12, 13, I don't think I saw my dad.
Mm.
I got reconnected with him back when I was 13. And even then, our relationship wasn't, you know, really like strong like that. And so my mom, she just worked, you know, trying to provide for us, you know. And she, when her and my dad divorced, I mean, she didn't have a job at that time. So she had to learn everything by herself. And so my mom, she was a nurse at night. During the day, she worked at a retirement home. And then during the weekend, she worked in our apartment complex, in the office, the leasing office. And so she's just trying to provide for us.
Mm.
To answer your question, I think what caused a lot of the stuff is just rebellion. I was a wicked dude, you know what I mean? Like, my heart needed to be transformed, but I also was just a hurt individual, hurt and angry. I was really angry because my dad wasn't there, and the man who was raising me was my mom's youngest brother, my Uncle Stan.
Mm.
And he was shot and killed when I was 13. And I think my only father figure being taken away, a lot of unprocessed grief and hurt and pain that I didn't know how to even voice. And so the Lord, like, started to pursue me. And I remember when I was 15 and I heard that gospel message for the first time in a house church, I just couldn't shake it. I still did bad things after that, but it was just like I was aware that, like, God was watching. And that's the reason why I put this story in the book, and I linked it to evangelism, because I think evangelism is about seed planting.
Mm.
planting seeds, because that seed that he planted in my life, God later on watered when I was able to go live with my aunt, who was a minister like 20 minutes outside of the city. And she connected me with this guy named Gary Brown. And he was an ex-gay member who God radically changed and redeemed. And he was going to Moody College, downtown Chicago. And he took me under his wing and like literally discipled me, taught me how to read the scriptures. And I remember one day a woman flirted with him. It was really simple. A woman flirted with him at the bank and he flirted back for the first time. I was so shocked. I was like, he was like a holy guy. And he flirted back. And then afterwards we left, he apologized to me for flirting with this lady in front of me. And he said, because the whole time his heart wasn't right. Mm. And that was the first time I ever heard the word convicted. I feel so convicted. And I said, why are you convicted? He said, bro, my heart wasn't right. Can you pray with me? And he began to pray. And the Lord spoke to me at that moment and said, Preston, this is what it means to love me. You don't love me like Gary loves me. And I went home that night and I repented and I gave my life to the Lord in my room. Wow. And the Lord saved me today in my room.
Talk about the passion of what you wrote about. This is your life, right? Yeah, apologetics, yeah. Evangelism. Explain that.
Like I said, Gary, he came into my life when I was 18 years old, discipled me, and he was just an evangelist. The first time I met Gary, he said, you want to go play basketball with me? And I go, okay, where are we going? He said, to Washington Park. If you know anything about Washington Park, that's a rough neighborhood. I said, are you from there? He said, no, I'm not from there, but you know, I know a lot of guys over there. And afterwards, he just started to share his testimony and he just started praying for the guys on the court.
Out so loud?
Like, yeah, he literally said, hey guys, can I talk to you guys for a minute? And these are like hardened dudes. And I'm sitting there thinking like, this dude is crazy. And he told his testimony and it was so sincere and it was so genuine. He had no pretense, no phoniness about him. That's what I loved. And he just started sharing his testimony and he was like, it's a lot of stuff going out there, you know, like, and then they just started asking him questions about, are you a Christian? Yada, yada, yada.
So they were listening.
They were listening. They were locked in.
Was he a good ball player?
He was.
That probably helped.
Yeah, yeah. And also, too, he came from the cultural context that they came from.
Yeah.
And so I think there was a lot of, and I think that God wants to strategically use us in the way he's brought
us up.
Made
us. Yeah, yeah. And where we've been.
Because they were intrigued. Like, this. He looks like us, but he doesn't sound like us. He doesn't act like us. Mm. He's different. And so he just started sharing his faith. And so I was discipled under that. And so it became very obvious that the Lord wanted me to be an evangelist. And then later on, as I started to do life as a Christian, it became very obvious that the Lord wanted me to teach others how to get the gospel to the outside world around them. With the book, I think for me, is I just wanted to normalize evangelism and apologetics. I think a lot of people are afraid of it. And I think that's an attack of the enemy to make us want to be afraid of sharing our faith. I think when we think about evangelism and apologetics, I think people think they have to know a whole bunch of knowledge.
Yeah, I think we're afraid of both of those.
Yeah.
One, do I know the answers to apologetics? Two, do I know how to share my faith? And what if I'm rejected? And what if someone's argument, if it's apologetics, is more knowledgeable than mine?
Yeah.
So I think we all pause for a second before we step out. Did you feel that at the beginning?
I think it was very obvious that to the core, an evangelist is who I was. Because when I first became a Christian, I just shared my faith with everybody. It was just like, if you was around me for 10 seconds when I first became a Christian, you were going to know that Jesus saved me.
What did it sound like?
Oh man, let me tell you my testimony. Only thing I knew was John 3:16.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I knew. But what was crazy is God still used it. Because God is not looking for the most knowledgeable. He's looking for the most faithful.
Yes.
Right? 1 Peter 3:15 tells us to always be prepared to make a defense for anyone who asks us for the reason for the hope that is in us, but yet do it with gentleness and respect. And when we think about apologetics, which derives from the Greek word apologia, which means to make a defense or argument for something, the first thing we think about is knowledge and not love. And I think that's the problem.
Mm.
Are you ready to give a defense? And so one, I want every Christian to know that if you are a Christian, you know more than the average non-believer as it pertains to God. And so a lot of times, an apologetic is your testimony.
Yeah.
Like, are you ready? Are you ready to give a defense of why you believe what you believe? And so don't think about knowledge more so than it is like having a heart that's ready to share your faith, you know? And I tell people all the time, the moment you tell somebody that you're a Christian, in a lot of ways, you're an evangelist. The moment they ask you questions, you become an apologist. And the moment they're willing to follow you is when you become a discipleship maker. Mm. And I think the three aren't the same thing, but they definitely hold hands. And so I just want to encourage Christians to know that, no, if Jesus saves you, you know, that's enough.
Yeah.
That's enough. Sometimes conversations go deeper. And it's okay with saying, I don't know. Just say, I don't know. You know, I think we put too much pressure on ourselves.
I mean, when you started, based on what your stories all throughout the book, you weren't as tender as what I saw on YouTube, right? You were not, you were winning arguments, not winning people.
I definitely was. And one thing that the Lord has shown me, you know, through the years is it's not about destroying other people's faith. It's about building up yours and knowing yours and defending yours for the sake of drawing them to the Lord and exposing lies that the enemy has planted. And so that's what I'm trying to teach others, because I think we see a lot of evangelism done wrong and just a lot of talking to people done wrong a lot. And so I just want to help
what
us.
Would you say, I mean, and again, it's throughout your book, but and especially if I'm someone that wants to be better and do this well, and we're all called, to make disciples, which starts with hearing Jesus. Yeah. It's got to start there. So I'm thinking, if you're listening to this, you're like, I want to be better at doing this. You need to pick this up, because there's coaching all the way through it.
Yeah.
So my question would be, you know, if you think about do's and don'ts, what would you say? You can pick either one. Three do's, one do, four don'ts, whatever.
I would say the first thing is when you think about reaching the outside world, whether it comes to different religions or just people who just cool on God, they don't want God or whatever, like first knowing your faith. Because I think a lot of times when we think about reaching other people, we want to learn worldviews, right, before we know our faith. Mm. And I think that, you know, we start to find identity in knowledge and information, and I think that's the biggest mistake that we can make. When you find your identity in the information you know and not the God that you know, you'll start to treat people like projects and not image bearers.
That's
so
big.
So finding your identity in God first and knowing Him, knowing your Bible, right? And so now you have a framework to engage with the outside world.
I remember we did a series decades ago called So What's the Difference? And it was a series, we're going to take 3 or 4 or 5, I don't remember, weeks, and say, what's the difference between world religions and Christianity? Mm-hmm. And so as we were preparing the series, we thought, what's week one going to be? Should we compare Christianity to Mormonism? And we said, no, week one should be, what do we believe?
Yeah.
So you got to start there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying. Because I think that if you ask the average Christian in the church, it's like, can you explain the key foundational essentials? You don't have to know the Bible front and back. You don't have to be a seminary graduate. But you should know that Jesus is God. And you should be able to point to John 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. Through Him all things were made, and without Him nothing was made that was made. And so Jesus is not just a man, but He's God in the flesh, right? He's Emmanuel. He's God with us, because, you know, every religion acknowledged that Jesus existed, but they deny His deity, right? So the Jehovah's Witnesses believe that He's Michael the Archangel. The Muslims believe that He's just a prophet. You know, the Mormons believe that He's Lucifer's brother, believe it or not. But the scriptures tell us, no, that He's the eternal God. He's the second member of the triune Godhead. He's God in the flesh. He's God. So how can you explain that to a different religion? Like, that's just a fundamental teaching of the Christian faith. Every religion in the world has found something to work for to please God. Christianity is the only one that says the God who finished the work found me. And so how can we explain to another religion they were saved by grace through faith? And it's not about works. Mm. You know, the Jehovah's Witnesses are knocking on so many doors to be accepted. The Mormons, they're trying to go on their 3-year missionary journey to be accepted. The Muslims praying 5 times a day to be accepted. But we know that we're accepted if we just accept the free gift of Jesus. Mm. And so just imagine how freeing that is to someone in another religion who's working like they were in the Old Testament to be clean, to be accepted. So how can you explain, you know, that we're saved by grace through faith? These are just fundamental teachings that I think that if Christians learned these fundamental teachings, they will have a framework to engage with other religions. You don't have to know the Bible front and back to explain that we're saved by grace through faith. I think a lot of times we major over minors and we argue about secondary and tertiary things that don't really matter. But it's like, how can we explain the fundamentals of our faith? And then more so than theology, I didn't want this book to be a step one, step two force in theology. I wrote it in story form, in creative story form, because I wanted to teach emotional intelligence. And so, like, how can we learn emotional intelligence in our evangelism? How can we have not just lead with our minds and our theology, but also with our hearts?
That's good.
In our humanity. And so I think that's one of the things that I'm trying to teach more than anything.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if you remember this, but you had a conversation with a woman and you struck up this conversation. I don't know where you were, some street. And she decided to talk to you because her daughter said, "Mommy, I think you should talk to this man." Do you remember
that? Yes.
And so I thought it was so interesting because then as you start the conversation, she says, "My spirit guide is telling me not to talk to you."
Yes.
I thought, okay, right now is a pivotal moment how you respond to this woman saying, "My spirit guide, my daughter just said to talk to you, but my spirit guide is saying don't talk to you." And I thought, if you respond poorly wrong, she's done. And if you respond rightly, she may continue the conversation.
Okay, let's hear it. What did you remember? Say?
Yeah, Ann didn't watch it.
Yeah, so that was a very interesting conversation.
You asked her, "Who's your spirit guide?" She said, "The universe."
The universe.
But what I loved is two things. You were tender. You then said, "Let me understand, who's your spirit guide?"
Yeah.
And she felt, you could see it. She felt seen, heard, loved. Mm-hmm. You said at one point, "I love you."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, meant it. You could tell, and this was 10 minutes in.
So you were respectful.
Yeah, definitely. Because when she pulled up with our daughter, I felt like the Lord wanted me to talk to her.
Right.
And I walked up to the car and I said, "We're having a conversation with people about faith." And, you know, and she was like, "Mom, you should talk to him because you're a woman of faith." And I'm like, "Yeah." And then she said, "Okay." She opened the car and she said, "My spirit God is telling me not to talk to you. I don't know why." As soon as she said that, I knew I needed to talk to her.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, I said, I think that's one of the reasons why we should talk.
Yeah.
Because we probably have some fundamental differences. I want to attack you, you know, I want to listen and hear your perspective. And she was like, and then her maybe it was a little, you know, weird way the Holy Spirit is working through her daughter, because her daughter pushed to do it. Mom, do it. And you can just tell she just felt this nervousness. And I just knew that in some way, somehow, I had to give the gospel to her. And I knew that Spirit God didn't want her to get the gospel.
Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to figure out, how can I respectfully give her the gospel? One of the reasons why I ask good questions is because a lot of times you can't have a conversation with someone long enough to give them the gospel if they don't feel seen.
Yeah.
Mm. I think Jesus condescending and becoming a man and dwelling amongst his own creation was a way for us to be seen by him in a way that we couldn't have if he didn't come down and dwell with us in humanity. And so I try to take that in my evangelism. It's like, why did Jesus ask questions that he already knew the answer to? Yeah. And so I knew her spirit God was not the spirit,
right. But
I asked, right? So she can feel heard, and also so she can teach me how to minister to her. Mm. A lot of times we don't ask questions and we try to just stick with theology. Mm. But if you ask questions, people will teach you how to serve them.
And who asked a lot of questions?
Jesus. The woman at the well. "Where is your husband?"
Mm-hmm.
He knew she had five.
Mm-hmm.
But he was trying to reveal something to her, namely himself. And so when I ask questions, it's not always because I don't know. It's because I'm trying to reveal Jesus to them. And so I just asked her questions. And you could tell she was uncomfortable, but you can tell she felt loved. And one thing I learned, if people feel loved, they'll continue to talk to you, even if they're uncomfortable.
Yeah. Mm. And she did. And it was like, as your story, you planted a seed.
Yeah, just planted a seed.
And who knows where that's going to bear fruit, but you planted it. That's what we're called to do.
Yeah.
So I'm loving this because I've got two evangelists at the table. My husband, Dave, is an evangelist, and Preston, you are too. Give us an application as a listener that maybe we're like, I'm a believer, but I haven't really, like, should I be doing this? Give us an application from today and what we've talked about.
Well, I think I want to free the listener to know this, that God is going to use you how he has uniquely made you.
Mm.
I think when we think about evangelism, we think about, if you don't walk up to a stranger and share the gospel with them, you're not useful. And I don't think that's necessarily, I think when we think about evangelism, we think about boldness. Boldness is not doing what men are afraid to do. Boldness is about obedience.
Mm.
It's about doing what God told you to do, right? I remember one time me and Jackie, we were in the airport leaving Virginia, and I see two Jehovah's Witnesses in the airport. And so you know me. I'm like, I'm about to go talk to these guys. But my wife, who's an introvert, she was like, okay, I'm about to go get something to eat. Peace. And she's like, I'm not finna go over there and talk to no Jehovah's Witnesses. And I had, after I got done talking to the Jehovah's Witnesses, had a really good conversation with them. I leave and I go to the restaurant where Jackie was at, and she has her head bowed praying with the waitress. And I said, wow, what happened here when my introverted wife gets into a prayer? And she just said, simply, the waitress said, who are you ordering food for? She was like, I'm ordering food for my husband. Where's your husband? Well, he's right there talking to two Jehovah's Witnesses. And the lady ended up saying, I used to be a Jehovah's Witness.
What?
And they excommunicated me. And I've been done with religion ever since. Mm. My wife shared the gospel with her, right? And they ended up praying with one another. So notice how she didn't pursue a conversation, but she didn't avoid one when God laid one on her lap. Mm. And I think that's what making disciples is. I think that to think that we're all going to be used in the exact same way is not realistic.
Yeah.
If God wants to use us all in the exact same way, he would have created us all the same. Mm-hmm. So Jackie is not somebody who's going to go out there and fish, but she knows how to prepare it.
<That's good.
laughs> You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm often the fisher. I'm reeling them in. And Jackie, she's not built like that. But when they come to her, she's ready. Mm. And I think evangelism and making disciples is not about doing it how you see somebody else doing it. It's about being ready. If you're a Christian, God is going to present those opportunities, whether that's with family members, coworkers, friends, or even strangers. I think it's about being obedient. I think it's about being ready.
That's
and
good.
Also being you.
And being you.
You know, because you were being you and Jackie was being her. Yeah. And, you know, that's all in your book, How to Tell the Truth. This book is full of stories like that.
Yeah.
Which really brings freedom to the reader. Say, okay, I can be who I am and God will use me. But it does require some boldness, too.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that tomorrow.
We want to thank Dave and Ann Wilson and their team for another edition of Family Life Today. Although our programs are produced in America, the issues facing families like forgiveness, communication, and taking care of our kids transcend national borders. These issues profoundly affect relationships everywhere. In Australia, family life is known as Power to Change, and our mission is to effectively develop godly families, the kind of families that change the world one home at a time. A key part of our mission includes strengthening marriages and families all around the world. We want to do whatever we can to bring timeless truths to the challenges you face as you seek to strengthen your family and join us in changing the world. Interested in mentoring a younger couple or being mentored yourself? Check out Power to Change's mentoring initiative designed to help you avoid those pitfalls we all can fall into. Email radio@powertochange.org.au or go to our website families.powertochange.org.au under the Helping Couples tab to get started today. Until tomorrow, God's blessings.